Sri Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda, Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada and Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasai Bhutala Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesa Sindhani Paskachari Sacharani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Garun Vaishnavam Scha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Scha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 15, Description of the Kingdom of God, Text 34. Tadva mamusya paramasya vaikuntha bhartu.
Tadva mamusya paramasya vaikuntha bhartu.
Kartum prakrikshtam ihadi mahimanda dibhyam. Lokanito rajataman tarabhava drishtya.
Lokanito rajataman tarabhava drishtya.
Sastraya ime ripavosya yatra. Please chant.
Tadvam amusya paramasya vaikuntha bhartuhu.
Tadvam amusya paramasya vaikuntha bhartuhu.
Kartum prakastam yadima himanda divya.
Kartum prakastam yadima himanda divya.
Lokanito prajatam antarabhava drishtya.
Lokanito prajatam antarabhava drishtya.
Papi yasastraya ime ripavosya yatra.
Papi yasastraya ime ripavosya yatra.
Tadvam amusya paramasya vaikuntha bhartu.
Tadvam amusya paramasya vaikuntha bhartu.
Prakastam iya dhima imanda devyam.
Kartum prakastam iya dhima imanda devyam.
Lokanito vrajatam antara bhava drishtya.
Lokanito vrajatam antara bhava drishtya.
Api yasastraya ime ripavosya yatra.
Api yasastraya ime ripavosya yatra.
Tadvamamusya paramasya vaikuntha bhartu.
Kartum prakastam yadima himanda divyam.
Lokanito vrajatam antara bhava drishtya.
Ladies.
Therefore,
therefore,
vam,
unto these two,
amusya,
of him, paramasya, the supreme, vikunta bhartuhu, the Lord of Vaikuntha, kartum, to bestow, prakrishtam, benefit, iha, in the matter of this offense, dhimahi, let us consider, mandadibhyam, those whose intelligence is not very nice, lokan, to the material world, itha, from this place Vaikuntha, vajitam, go, antarabhava, duality, visya, on account of seeing, papiyasaha, sinful, traya, three, ime, these, ripavaha, enemies, asya, of a living entity, yatra, where, translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. So these are the four Kumaras talking about Jai and Vijay. Therefore, let us consider how these two contaminated persons should be punished. The punishment should be apt, for thus benefit can eventually be bestowed upon them. Since they find duality in the existence of Vaikuntha life, they are contaminated and should be removed from this place to the material world where the living entities have three kinds of enemies. Purport. This purport answers one of the most commonly asked and difficult to answer questions that people have in the Hare Krishna movement. The reason why pure souls come into the existential circumstances of the material world, which is considered to be the criminal department of the Supreme Lord, is stated in Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, verse 27. What's stated there? Anybody know? Try. What is stated, right? 7th chapter, text 27, that might relate as to why a living entity comes to the material world. Yes, each situation. Very good. I know this is a yatra where people study the shastra, right? Correct? You're always having shastra classes and bhakti shastri. It is stated, going on with the purport, it is stated that as long as a living entity is pure, he is in complete harmony with the desires of the Supreme Lord. But as soon as he becomes impure, he is in disharmony with the desires of the Lord. By contamination, he is forced to transfer to this material world, where the living entities have three enemies, namely desire, anger, and lust. Now, this is interesting. When you look up Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse, he's referencing Bhagavad Gita 16:21, which is what? Anybody know Bhagavad Gita 16:21? Sanskrit or English? Three enemies. Chapter 16 is about what? Topic of chapter 16, Bhagavad Gita?
Divine and demoniac
nature. And what are the three main enemies? Yes. Lust, anger, and greed. Trividam narakashedam, dwaram nasanam atmana, kama krodas tita lobas, tasmat eta tvayam prajet. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, which definitely Srila Prabhupada was referring to here, and Prabhupada usually translates as lust, anger, and greed. In this purport, he doesn't directly state he's referring to 16:21, but definitely he is. And here Prabhupada's saying desire, anger, and lust, instead of lust, anger, and greed. So he's defining these terms a little differently, and we'll see as we go on here. Going on, these three enemies force the living entities to continue material existence. Force the living entities. Wasn't that Arjuna's question? By what is one forced to sinful activities? You all remember that question in the Gita? The first time I read Prabhupada's Gita, I was in university, and I remember that question was at the bottom of the right-hand page. Arjuna says, by what is it that one is compelled to sinful activities, even against one's will, as if compelled by force. And I thought, what is it? I always wanted to know the answer to that question. Why is it that I do things that I don't want to do? Am I the only one with this problem? We decide, I'm going to behave like this. I'm going to do this, and I'm not going to do this. And then somehow you do it anyway.
Yes.
Right? You say, okay, next time this happens, I'm not going to get angry. I'm just going to be cool. And then it happens again, and you get angry. You're like, what was that? And so I, what is the answer? What is the answer? What is the answer? And I turn the page, and what does Krishna say? It is? His lust, anger, only, which is later transformed into wrath, which is the old devouring sinful enemy of this world. And I was so disappointed. I thought, is that what it is? So here Prabhupada's saying like that. These three enemies force the living entities to continue material existence. And when one is free from them, he is eligible to enter the kingdom of God. One should not, therefore, be angry in the absence of an opportunity for sense gratification, and one should not be lusty to acquire more than necessary. Okay, so now we can understand how Prabhupada's defining these words in this purport. So here he's talking sense gratification, anger, and lusty to acquire more than necessary. So Prabhupada here is using lust to refer to, if you want to acquire more than necessary, we usually call that greed. So in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada's using the word lust to refer to greed. And he's using desire to refer to lust, and here sense gratification to refer to lust. And of course, this is a very interesting instruction. One should not, therefore, be angry in the absence of an opportunity for sense gratification, and one should not be lusty to acquire more than necessary. In this verse, it is clearly stated that the two doormen should be sent into the material world, where criminals are allowed to reside. Not like this also. Criminals are allowed to reside. So Krishna could take all the rebellious living entities and put them eternally into a state of limbo. You know, bhutva bhutva praliyate, when the universe is destroyed, we enter into the body of Mahavishnu. So we could just be that in a state of, you take the criminals and put them into a state of suspended animation forever. But Krishna allows the rebellious living entities to have a world where they can try to fulfill their desires. And it's cool that your microphone goes on without electricity. But it's a little hard for me to see. A light would be really nice. Does anyone have a torch? That helps. Okay, thank you. All right, there we go. Since the basic principles of criminality are sense gratification, anger, and unnecessary lust, so here you can see this lust, anger, and greed again being defined as sense gratification, anger, oh wow, thank you, and unnecessary lust. Unnecessary lust being a stand-in for greed. Persons conducted by these three enemies of the living entity are never promoted to Vaikuntha Loka. People should learn Bhagavad Gita and accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as the Lord of everything. Now here Prabhupada's giving what's the secret. You can't just get rid of lust, anger, and greed on a material level. They should practice satisfying the senses of the Supreme Lord instead of trying to satisfy their own senses. Training in Krishna consciousness will help one be promoted to Vaikuntha. Tadvam amusya paramasya pikunta bhartuhu kartum prakritam iha dimahimandabiyam lokan ito vajatamantarabhavadrisya papi yashastraya ime vipavo swayatra. Therefore, let us consider how these two contaminated persons should be punished. The punishment should be apt, for thus benefit can eventually be bestowed upon them. So the Kumaras want to punish Jai and Vijay for the benefit of Jai and Vijay. Since they find duality in the existence of Vaikuntha life, they are contaminated and should be removed from this place to the material world where the living entities have three kinds of enemies. Okay, thanks. So here we see, why is it that one comes to the material world? What keeps us in the material world, and what will get us out of the material world? Come from darkness to light. We have 10 people working on the switches there. Surely, with 10 people, we'll figure it out. Anyway, it's all right. No problem. We can survive. It's working. Yes, some things are working, and some things are. The amplifier is working, so that's nice. I don't have to yell. That's okay. Be distracting. So here we see the main problem that the Kumaras are identifying is that of duality. Now, of course, the Kumaras are jnanis. So the point of view of the Kumaras is that the doorkeeper should not see anything separate from the Lord. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur talks about how the view of the four Kumaras is that all of us exist within the abdomen of the Lord. You remember that Mother Yasoda saw that?
Yeah.
Everyone within the abdomen of the Lord? And the Kumaras were thinking, how can these gatekeepers imagine that any of us is going to pierce the Lord's abdomen? That any of us are going to cause any trouble for the Lord. They should see everything in harmony. This is one of the descriptions of the Uttama Adhikari, that the Uttama Adhikari sees how everyone is actually in harmony with the Lord's plan, and everyone is ultimately serving Krishna, right? They're seeing that harmony. The very nice statement in Krishna book, second chapter, The Prayers of the Demigods, where Prabhupada says that the materialistic person sees the world as very aggressive, but the Krishna conscious person sees that everything is very happily situated. They experience everything as being in harmony. And in the Rasa Lila section of the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada says that the whole world is full of Krishna's singing. The whole world is full of Krishna's singing. So those who are attuned to Krishna, they're experiencing the world as a musical concert. Prabhupada then goes on to say, Krishna is dancing and the living entities are dancing, but some living entities want to dance separately from Krishna. He says, we should not dance separately from Krishna. We should not dance alone, nor should we dance with anyone else other than Krishna. So the Kumaras are saying that this Jayan Vijay, because they're seeing that some living entity is separate from harmonious attitude with Krishna, they don't belong in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, there's no concept of friends and enemies. Even the Uttam Adhikari in this world, the Uttam Adhikari by the 11th canto definition, there's different definitions of Uttam Adhikari. This is just a little side note. And the Uttam Adhikari of one definition cannot necessarily be corresponded to the Uttam Adhikari of another definition. But the Uttam Bhakta, they're saying everything is in harmony. They're hearing the music of Krishna and the dancing of Krishna always. They don't see, oh, this person is my friend, this person is my enemy, this person is a devotee, this person is a demon. They see everything as happily situated. Therefore, nasochatina kanchati, they don't hanker for anything, they don't lament about anything, they don't think like the demon in the 16th chapter, this person is my enemy, I have to destroy them. And if we consider what materialistic consciousness is, it's very much like that, isn't it? This is good for my sense gratification, so I want it. This is not good for my sense gratification, therefore I don't want it. This living entity is helping me in my sense gratification, therefore they're my friend. This person is hurting me, therefore they're my enemy. And even when we take up Krishna consciousness, this mentality can persist. You know, well, these people are helping me in my Krishna consciousness, so they're my friend. And these people are not, so they're my enemy. Whereas Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said, those who criticize me, they're my friends because they're helping me surrender more to Krishna. He saw everyone as helping him in his Krishna consciousness. So this is the view of Vaikuntha. This is the attitude of Vaikuntha. And because Jai and Vijay prevented the four Kumaras from entering, didn't see them in harmony with the Lord, the four Kumaras said, oh, you're in a view of duality. You're in a friends and enemies mentality. You see anything is out of harmony with the Lord. Therefore, you belong in the world of duality. Now, of course, this duality is an illusion. It's not real. And it's nicely explained here because we want to see things that way. Therefore, we are put into an atmosphere where we can. And we are put into an atmosphere where we become influenced by lust, anger, and greed. Or as Prabhupada's calling it here, sense gratification, anger, and lust. Which then force us to see things the way we want to see them. Think about that concept for a minute. It's something like people who go and see movies or read books. The people who design the movies, generally, they're designing movies to cater to the existing demands of the public, correct? As sometimes a person may make a movie to try to elevate the public to a higher platform. Certainly when we devotees make movies, that's our aim. We're not trying to pander to people's desires and modes, we're trying to elevate them. But generally, when people make movies, write books, they're thinking, what do people want? And they create something that they want. So someone who wants to see some movie of violence and friends and enemies and so forth, they pay their money and they see the movie, and then what does the movie do? It controls their emotions. Is this correct? Yes? But why are you... The movie's forcing you, practically forcing you, to feel a certain way. But you're voluntarily submitting to that force because you want it to feel a certain way. The same is there with intoxicants. A person, when they take an intoxicant, alcohol or even coffee and tea, why are they taking that intoxicant? They want to feel a certain way. A person taking coffee and tea, they want to feel some rush of energy. They want to feel like they have more physical energy, more mental clarity. So they take this drug to fulfill their desire, and then what does the drug do? It forces. Once you've ingested the alcohol, once you've ingested the caffeine, you're then forced to feel a particular way. Is this correct? But how did you get under this force? It started with one's own desire. So one's own desire, it starts with that desire. By that desire, you enter into a particular atmosphere, which then forces you to do what you want to do. And then if you say, well, I'm being forced. So because we want to see duality, we want to see in terms of friends and enemies, we want to see in terms of good and bad for myself, we want to be out of harmony. Okay, if you want to be out of harmony, then you have to be an illusion because everything is in harmony. You have to then perceive things differently than what they are. That is called maya. Maya means something that is not. It's not what it appears to be. We see this is good, this is bad, but it's not actually like that. We see this is my friend, this is my enemy. It's not actually like that. That perception is a covering of our consciousness that allows us to see things differently from what they are. We see ourselves as separate from Krishna. We're not separate from Krishna. But we have this covering that allows us to see things that way because that's what we want. We see the world and life as very inharmonious. We see conflict and strife, even within the family in Kali Yuga. As one of the surprises, right, of the sages in former ages, that even husband and wife would argue. They were surprised. So even within the family, we may see, oh, my wife is not in harmony with me. My husband's not in harmony. The children are not in harmony. Parents are not in harmony. Within the company, within the business, even in a spiritual organization, we have to say. We may, this group is saying, oh, we should take this quote. And this group is saying, no, this quote is more important. In our Hare Krishna movement, we don't fight with bombs, we fight with quotes. Well, this quote's more important because my quote's from a purport and your quote's from a letter. But my quote's more important because my quote was said later. You have to see it this way. No, you have to see it this way. And we again make friends and enemies. We're the conservative party. We're the liberal party. Just a few weeks ago, when devotees sent me this letter, you know, which party is going to take over ISKCON and kick the other party out? I'm like, why does anybody have to be kicked out? You know, what is this? So this mentality of duality, of seeing, of experiencing, instead of harmonious music and a beautiful dance, experiencing reality as chaotic noise. Actually, the demons like chaotic noise. If you ever have the misfortune to hear any modern music, a lot of it is chaotic noise. When we were preaching at Woodstock Festival in Poland with Indrajumna Swami's group a few years ago, we took a Rath Yatra cart through the festival, and there was a group of young people wearing all black and with strange makeup, and they were decorated rather oddly. They looked like they were preparing for a job application to be a Yamaduta. You know? And they were playing this music. I'm going to send in their resume to Yamaraj, you know, with their picture. And they were playing this, I don't even want to call it music, they were playing this thing that sounded like wolves growling. Like, and we're going by with our Rath Yatra, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. So the demons like just noise. You go to the modern cities, correct? It's just a noise. Car horns honking and sirens screeching and everything too loud so your eardrums burst. And in materialistic consciousness, you actually perceive that reality is made up of noise, inharmonious noise. You don't see a dance. You see everyone on stage doing their own dance and bumping into each other and falling off the stage and pushing each other. That's how we perceive it. But that's not the actual reality. The actual reality is that everything is perfectly coordinated. Even for the rebellious beings, all of our karma is all perfectly coordinated. Have you ever meditated about that? How is it that I get my karma, and you get your karma, and you get your karma, and you get your karma, and it all fits together? And I get to be the agent for your karma, and he gets to be the agent for her karma, and she gets to be the agent for my karma, and we all get exactly what we deserve. And it's, how do you do that? I mean, could any of us manage something like that? Impossible. And it's all woven together perfectly. Everything is actually harmonious. So one who desires to dance separately from Krishna, if we think about harmony as a dance, we've all seen a beautiful dance where many dancers work in synchronization, right? Actually, last year at New Vrindavan, one of our second generation devotees put on a dance that was a combination of Bharat Natyam and yoga. It was really incredible. And it was to the song Om Namo Narayanaya. And, you know, one person is Narayan and one is Lakshmi. And then you can have different people showing the different arms, right, standing behind each other. And all the different dancers working together, almost as one. So each dancer is individual, and yet the whole dance is done as if done by one body. You've seen dances like this? That is spiritual consciousness. It's exactly like that. that each individual is doing their own dance, but is part of a harmonious whole. And it's very satisfying to do that. We've experienced that when we do work individually as part of a group, working for some combined effort and some combined mission, and when people each contribute their individual desires and individual natures to some common cause, and everybody's getting along in sync, isn't that wonderful? Yes? That's what we're looking for. We keep trying to find that. That's what we're looking for in the family. That's what we're looking for in our work. That's what we're looking for in our society. That's what we're looking for in our Hare Krishna movement. That sense that I can be fully who I am. I can contribute myself. I can feel like I fit, like I have a place, like I have value, like I have meaning as part of a greater whole. That I'm fully who I am as an individual. I don't get swallowed by the whole. I don't get eaten by the whole. I don't lose my individuality. I don't become part of a whole where someone else says, you have to think this, and you have to do this, and you have to be this. And I lose myself. And yet, I lose myself in a way, in a beautiful way, of contributing to something greater than myself. So that is Vaikuntha. But the living entity who says, well, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. Let me do my own dance. And while this beautiful, and that we've seen this happen also, right? We've been in a group of people working for a common cause, and everything's working harmoniously, and things are clicking, and people are in sync, and each person is doing what they do best, and contributing to the group, and creating synergy where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And we're feeling energized. You've all felt this?
Yeah.
And then one person in the group gets out of harmony. Have you experienced that?
Okay.
One person starts saying, but wait a minute! What about my thing? I want to do this, and you're doing that, and you're doing that. And then how do you feel when that happens? So that's what we have all done. That's what the Kumaras are seeing that Jai and Vijay have done. They've broken out of the synergistic, in sync, harmonious, loving, caring, but fully, fully valuing individuality. The achincha beta beta tattva. Being fully an individual and yet being fully harmonious. They've broken out of that and asserted their individuality separate from the whole. They said, if that's what you want, if that's what you want, if that's what you want to experience, you can't be in this group anymore. And if that's what you want to experience, you have to go to this movie theater. You have to go to the illusion realm. And in the illusion realm, the director of the movie, who of course is Durga Devi, she will influence you with Kam, Krodha, and Lobha. So you can fulfill your desires. And under the influence of Kam, Krodha, and Lobha, yes, you can think, I am the best, look at that, and you can fight with everybody in illusion. And be pushed by the waves of illusion until one day you say, I don't think I like this anymore. I don't think I like this anymore. I don't like having an inner mentality of stress and anxiety and anger and lust and greed. Bring me back to peace and harmony. Now, what's interesting is that Srila Prabhupada is going at the solution from two different directions. First, he goes from it from one direction, then at the end of the purport, he goes from another. The first thing he says is, get out from the control of lust, anger, and greed. And the way he says it is... No, it's fine. Candles are fine. He says, one should not therefore be angry in the absence of an opportunity for sense gratification, and one should not be lusty to acquire more than necessary. So first Prabhupada's going at the solution by get out of the lust, anger, and greed. So let's look at that solution first. Don't be angry in the absence of opportunity for sense gratification, and don't be lusty to get more than what's necessary. So I would like to submit, my dear friends, that 99.999% of the time when we are angry, it is probably simply because either we've lost some opportunity for sense gratification, or we're afraid that we will lose it. There is transcendental anger. Transcendental anger might be what, at least some of the time, what's impelling us in our preaching work. We can be angry that cows are being slaughtered. We can be angry that babies are being aborted. We can be angry that people are being trained in atheism. Basically, we can be angry that Sita's being abducted by Ravana. And that anger can impel us in our preaching. Not that preaching always has to be impelled by anger. But there is a kind of transcendental anger. But generally, and you can test this, next time you get angry, hopefully that will be a long time from now. So you won't get an opportunity to test it for a very long time. And maybe by that time you'll forget this class because it will be 5 years from now. But the next time you feel angry, stop and consider, what am I afraid of? Krishna wraps this attachment, fear, and anger twice in the Gita. Attachment, fear, and anger. And Prabhupada's saying here, one gets angry when we feel our sense gratification is threatened. The tricky thing about this is that we don't generally identify our sense gratification as our sense gratification, because we're trained as human beings in a civilized society to say that we're not selfish. So we have all these layers of rationalization for ourselves. Well, it's not really about me. It's not really about me. So try and experiment. The next time you feel angry, stop before you speak, before you do anything. Stop, maybe go to another place and say, what am I afraid of losing? Or what am I afraid of not getting? Sochiti kanchiti. What am I afraid that I won't get? What am I afraid that I'll lose? And then say, well, the Shastra says anger is related to lust. So if I believe the Shastra, we all say we believe the Shastra, right? Otherwise, why are you here listening to Shastra? So if I believe the Shastra, that anger is related to lust, what lust do I have here? Let me be at least honest with myself. I don't have to tell the world what all my problems are, but at least let me be honest with myself. What am I afraid of for myself? Am I afraid that I'll lose money? Am I afraid that I'll lose love from somebody? Am I afraid that I'll lose some facility? That I'll lose a place to stay? That I'll lose food to eat? Am I afraid that I'll lose my community? That people won't like me anymore? They'll say bad things about me? What am I afraid I'm going to lose? Am I afraid I'm going to lose my health? And that way you can... that's what I'm afraid of losing. And then you can think, all those things, first of all, they're all illusory. Thinking that my security and happiness is in the things of this world, is in money and health and family and community and all the reputation and all this stuff, it's all an illusion. My happiness is in connection with Krishna. And who can take it away from me? Only Krishna, anyway. Who can decide? Mari Krishna Rakyake, Rakyake Krishna Marike. Nobody can hurt me if Krishna doesn't will it, and if Krishna wills it, then nobody can stop it. And anyway, I can't be hurt. I'm a soul. I'm an invulnerable soul. And that way you can get rid of the desire for sense gratification, which is impelling the fear, which is impelling the anger. And the lust for more and more, or as other places stated, the greed. One should be greedy for more and more Krishna consciousness, not more and more things of this world. If you're greedy for more and more things of this world, you can simply think, this just means when I die, my children will have more trouble to go through my things. If you've ever experienced when someone dies and they have lots and lots of things, and sometimes it takes their children 1 year to go through all of their possessions. That will be the only result. More and more things to take care of, more and more things to worry about, more and more things for someone else to worry about, more and more things to protect. So in this way, through Gyan, one can deal with lust, anger, and greed. But, you know, ultimately, that's not going to work. That can work a lot of the time. But it's not the ultimate solution, and it doesn't get the real problem out of the heart. I'm sure all of us have had some success, some of the time, to some degree, dealing with lust, anger, and greed through Gyan, right? Yes? But does it work 100% of the time? Does it work 100% of the time? No. Because the root isn't out. Therefore, that's not the only solution we're giving. That is a solution, by the way. Prabhupada is giving that as a solution. It's not that that's not worth anything. But it's not the only solution. It has to be coupled with... No, I'm fine. The candle's fine. I'm fine with the candle. I'm fine. People should learn Bhagavad Gita and accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as the Lord of everything. They should practice satisfying the senses of the Supreme Lord instead of trying to satisfy their own senses. So the real solution is to get back to the root of the problem, which was a desire for disharmony. Because it was the desire for disharmony that put us under the control of lust, anger, and greed in the first place. And if we want to get out of their control, we have to want to get out of their control, which means we have to want the other. The other is that I'm under the control of a loving, caring, best friend, God. And I can again come and be part of the harmonious dance. When I want to be the center, then I get on stage and I do my own dance. And then I'm put in a world where everyone's doing their own dance. And then I crash into the other dancers. I fall off the stage. And it's simply a mess. So I can try to make some adjustment, and Prabhupada's giving us that here. But ultimately, I have to decide, wait a minute, I want to be part of the harmonious whole. I want to get my pleasure from Krishna's pleasure, rather than independently. And we may say, well, if I do that, what will happen to me? But that is the place where I can be fully me. I can't be fully me in illusion. First of all, an illusion, I don't even know who I am. As Rupa and Sanatan said to Mahaprabhu, who am I? I think I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm male and female, I'm old, I'm young, I'm this, I'm that, but none of that's me. And I think the waves of lust, anger, and greed in the mind are my feelings, which they're not. So an illusion, I can't even find the real me. An illusion is constantly a struggle to find where I fit and where I belong and who I am and what I should do and how I can feel comfortable and right, and isn't it? It's only when I come back as a member of the real dance that then I find my place. And then I have value. As Prabhupada says, the little screw from the machine, when you take it out of the machine, it has no value. One time when I was using my computer for projection, some devotee trying to be helpful took the projector plug out of my computer. But they took it out without properly unscrewing it. So they pulled the internal screw out of my computer, which is why I don't let people touch my computer anymore. So I contacted the company. And I said, how do I, you know, get this screw? And they said, oh, $20. I said, $20 for a screw? They said, well, that's the postage cost. The screw is only 99 cents. I said, just put it, they said, maybe it'll get lost. I said, just put it in an envelope, 15 cents postage. If it gets lost, you can resend it. So the little screw is only worth 99 cents, nothing. But when it's in the machine, it's worth something. So outside of our relationship with Krishna, my dear friends, we're not worth much. Sorry, we were talking about this the other night. We're not worth much. Separate from Krishna, trying to do our own dance, who cares for us? We're a speck of a speck of on a speck on a speck. The whole universe is a speck on the hood of Anantasesha. This planet is a speck in the universe. On this planet, Bahrain is a speck. Try telling people in other parts of the world that you live in Bahrain. What happens? They look at you. What? What? Huh? Is that a city somewhere? It's a little speck. And here, who cares for us? What we do, what we think, what we accomplish, in the whole scheme of life, what does it matter? Really, not much. We all know that, don't we? We try not to think about it too much. But as soon as we're part of the harmonious whole, as soon as we're connected with Krishna, then everything we do has infinite value. That's our real importance. So all of our reading, all of our chanting, all of our remembering, all of our serving, all of our deity worship, all of our Vaishnav Sangha is simply to bring us to the point of desire. And that we'll be discussing tonight and tomorrow night. Simply to the point of desire, because it's all based on desire. I want to be harmonious again. I want to stop making my own noise. And I want to be part of the choir. I want to be part of the dance. I want to be part of the hall. I want to be back where I belong. And as soon as that desire is strong enough and we lose the desire to make our own noise, then then Krishna removes the lust, anger, and gone. Because we don't want it anymore. The four Kumaras are saying, let Jai and Vijay be covered by lust, anger, and greed, because that's what they want. So as soon as we change the heart's desire and want to be back in the world of harmony, then Krishna removes the lust, anger, and greed. And then we can be actually who we are and who we want to be. So that is the purpose of everything we are doing. When we're chanting our japa, it's to increase our desire. When we're hearing the shastra, it's to increase our desire. When we associate with the devotees, it's to increase our desire. But yes, I want Krishna. So one should be thinking like that with everything we're doing. Even our ordinary activities, as we were speaking the other night, when we're connecting them with Krishna, it should be to increase our desire that Krishna, I want to come back in my natural position of pleasing you and serving your senses and again be part of the universal, eternal, beautiful, harmonious dance. So thank you for tolerating the class in the dark. At least the mic worked. Yeah, that's pretty good. And thank you, all the people running around trying to fix everything, even though it didn't get fixed. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Sometimes I get those. Not often, but sometimes. Yes, cute.
But in this particular incident, Jaya,
yes.
They did their job.
They did a joke?
No,
they did a joke.
They were doing their job. Ah.
And Kumaras, they expressed their desire to have the darshan of the Lord. Both are seems to be the right.
Ah. All right, well, there's several ways of looking at this. So you're saying that Jai and Vijay, they're just doing their job. The four Kumaras, they want to see the Lord. Who did anything wrong?
Yeah.
So the first way to look at this, of course, and this is perhaps not such an intellectually satisfying explanation, is that it's Leela. So you can look at it from that perspective, and that's correct. That Lord Narayan had a desire, he had a purpose, And because he had this purpose, and because Jai and Vijay are actually totally surrendered to the Lord's purpose, because actually they are fully in harmony with the Lord's purpose, and so are the four Kumaras, that Krishna, Narayan, was able to influence them in such a way that they acted to fulfill his purpose. And that really none of this was out of harmony at all. So it can be seen that way, and understood that way, and that is correct. But another way to look at it, which is the way that's being described here, is that Jai and Vijay were actually out of harmony. That although they were doing their job, they had the wrong mentality with doing their job. It's not just doing your job. It's how you do your job. What's the motive for doing your job? You know, we all experienced as members of the Krishna consciousness movement that we can do our service in a way that's pleasing to Krishna and pleasing to the Vaishnavas, and we can do the same service in a way that doesn't please anybody. It's not just what you're doing. It's also how you're doing it and what's driving you. Correct? Am I correct? Now, if I say to you, I'll tell you a specific instance. So recently when I was in Are we losing this now too? Does that mean I should just stop the class? Is that my signal that now I should be quiet? Maybe I shouldn't tell the story? You turned off the mic. Can you turn it back on? Whatever you did, can you undo it? Yes? Because recently I was in Vrindavan, and there was this one elderly gentleman who had worked all of his life as, thank you, had worked all of his life as a dentist. And he was coming to Vrindavan to offer free dental care to the poor residents of Vrindavan and the devotees. And watch the guys in the back, they're much more interesting. So the reason he had found out about Vrindavan was he was treating some devotees in America, and they had told him about Vrindavan. So he'd had contact with devotees for many years as a dentist. And very pious man, he's Catholic, and he chants the rosary every day. He retired, and now he's on his own. He travels the world just with a little backpack, spends a few months every year staying in a Catholic monastery. A very unusual and pious person. It was his first visit to Vrindavan. And one of the devotees had convinced him to attend my Bhagavad Gita class. And he was talking to me a couple days later. He said, I was so impressed with the class that I decided to buy a Bhagavad Gita. He said, so I went to the temple shop and I bought a Bhagavad Gita. And the way that I was trained in the monastery, he said, is that you read something from scripture, and if something really affects you, you close the book and you sit down and you meditate on that passage of scripture and really try to understand what it means for you. He said, so I did that. He said, I was sitting in the temple room and I was reading the Bhagavad Gita and something really struck me. So I took the book and put it down on the
floor.
And I was sitting meditating on what I had just read from the Bhagavad Gita. He said, then one young man wearing orange came to me and started yelling at me. Remember, this is a 60-something-year-old Western gentleman, doctor. So he's yelling at him. You're so offensive to the man. He told me this boy's yelling at me for like 15, 20 minutes. And I said to him, I'm very sorry, I didn't know, you know. And he kept yelling at me. He said, finally I said to this boy, you know, I think you need this Bhagavad Gita more than I do. He said, so I gave him the Gita. I said, did he take it? He said, yeah, he took it and walked away. So it's not just what service you're doing, it's how you're doing it. So I'm sure this brahmachari was thinking that he was doing some service for Krishna, and he was defending Krishna. But actually he did the opposite. Understand? Exactly the opposite. A nice opportunity to preach to some sophisticated, intelligent, learned person who comes to the Dham to offer service, and instead he offends him. So just on doing my job, that's not enough. I'm doing my service for Krishna Prabhu so I can step on all the devotees in the process, you know. I've got to get out the door so I can step on your heads as I'm going. So they had a job to do, but they did it in such a way that the four Kumaras detected that they were in duality. So both of those answers are valid answers. Some other question? Yes, Prabhu.
Mataji, two questions. First question is, in your early days when you said Kama Yesha Krudaya, you were disappointed.
Yes, very disappointed.
Subsequent to your passage in the path, how do you react to that? And second question, you asked now or are
you? Well, let me answer the first one first. How do I feel about it now? I now see that I'm responsible and that I can do something about it. Once you admit responsibility, you can do something about it. So when I first read it, it sounded just like, we're probably saying you're forced. So when I first read it, it just sounded like, well, I'm being forced because I'm being forced. It didn't seem like, it seemed circular to me. It didn't seem like there's a way out. And now I understand that this being forced is something I'm voluntarily submitting to. And because I'm voluntarily submitting to, I can voluntarily not submit to it if I choose. So I now see it in terms of my personal choice, that what forces me to act improperly is misuse of my free will. And your next question?
You said about the harmony, and one goes in disharmony.
Yes.
In an institution like ISKCON, let's say some devotees have a higher principle, some have not sort of passed to reach a mature state, so they may practice bhakti in mode of passion. So they may want to influence a particular decision on others and try to take the movement along, which sounds to some of the people who are at a higher principle that it is in disharmony. How have you experienced that situation? How do you deal?
Oh no, never. You all believe that? Of course. Hundreds of times. So your question is, if one person is on a lower level in bhakti and one person is on a higher level, how do you prevent the lower level person from dragging things down? So my first question is, if you're asking that question, I'm not saying you, but in general, when people ask that question, who do they assume is on the higher level? Huh? Who do they assume is on the higher level?
Me.
Yes, themselves. And the person they assume is on the lower level, who are they thinking is on the higher level?
Hmm? They think they are lower level.
The person who's on the lower level, do they think they're on the lower level?
No.
So each person is thinking they're on the higher level. So first thing is, maybe I'm not the one that's on the higher level. That's first thing. So if you're in a conflict with someone and you're convinced that you're on the higher level and they're on the lower level, please be aware that they're also convinced that they're on the higher level and you're on the lower level. Okay? So if they can be an illusion, maybe you can too. So little humility is always a nice thing. Even if you're not altogether for humility, even if you don't want to become fully humble, you can always try a little of it. Little. You stop and think, it's possible. It might be. It might be possible that the other person is on the higher level and I'm on the lower level. That's possible. It's possible we're both on a lower level. That's possible. First thing. Beginning of knowledge, 13th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, 8 through 12. Beginning of knowledge is humility. And then it's also possible we're both on a higher level. But we have different angles of vision. And if you're both on a higher level and have different angles of vision, they can be harmonized. So how to deal with it depends on the actual situation. But first start with some humility. Please let us never assume that I am higher than the other person. And that the reason we have a conflict is I'm functioning on a higher level than the other person. Let's just never assume that. Let's always assume that I am also subject to lust, anger, and greed. I'm also subject to imperfect senses. Yes? Do we agree that we all have imperfect senses?
Yes.
Yes. Not that the other guy does and I don't. Do I make mistakes?
Yes.
Anybody here never make mistakes? Please raise your hand. What's a sin? So I'm imperfect. I'm the one who has imperfect senses. I'm the one who makes mistakes. Am I illusioned? And sorry about this one. Do I cheat? You don't have to raise your hand for that one. Anyone here who never cheats? No, so come on. So a little humility is helpful. And believe me, if you just take a little humility, wait a minute, I have imperfect senses, I can be illusioned, I can make mistakes, and boy, I even cheat. And I can even cheat myself. So let me listen to what the other person has to say. Maybe they're right. It's one thing, when I was a Gurukul teacher for so many years, I taught my students, if you think someone else is wrong, you're sure they're wrong, you should say in your head, maybe they're right, and while you're thinking that, open your mouth and say, I'm confused. Instead of thinking, I'm right, and you open your mouth and say, you're wrong. And sometimes are we sure we're right and then we get so embarrassed? Has this ever happened to any of you?
Yeah.
You're sure you're right. You're absolutely sure you're right. And you fight and you fight and you fight and you fight. And then you find out that you're wrong. But once one of my sons was talking to me, I forget what it was about. And at one point he said, Mata, are you sure you're right? I said, yes, I'm sure. And he paused and then he said, 100% sure? And he's a very smart boy. So I thought, he knows something I don't know. And I stopped it. I said, well, maybe 90%. I said, you know something I don't know. And of course I was wrong. So if we all use a little humility, I think we'll get along much better. And then Prabhupada would often give the example of the different political parties. I don't think you have them here. Here you don't have more than one political party, do you?
No.
But in many countries of the world, there's more than one political party. And the political parties have different views how to help the nation. But their goal is to serve the nation. So in the same way, each of us as individuals, we have our particular inspiration how to push on the Krishna consciousness movement. And even if it's lower, that's also there, frankly. You know, I wrote an article, which you can find on dandavatsaniskan.com, called What is ISKCON and Who is a Member of ISKCON? And I looked at ISKCON through three modes and through transcendence. So on a transcendental platform, ISKCON is the Leela of Mahaprabhu. You can see internal and external Leela. So those who are in transcendental consciousness, they'll experience ISKCON as being part of Mahaprabhu's Leela for preaching, or part of Mahaprabhu's Leela for experiencing separation in love of God. Those in the mode of goodness will experience ISKCON as a platform for personal purification and salvation. And you can find a number of quotes where Prabhupada will say that ISKCON exists for the purpose of personal liberation and salvation. Those who are in the mode of passion will see ISKCON in terms of material dharma. And they'll see the purpose of ISKCON is to establish Varnashram. And you'll find quotes from Prabhupada. The purpose of ISKCON is to establish Varnashram. Varnashram is material. It's in Rajagun. Ordinary Dharma. And then you'll find those in the mode of ignorance who think that the Krishna consciousness movement is a place to get a place to sleep and food to eat or money or power and position and that kind of thing. And Prabhupada said, be careful you don't do that. But there is room for people to act within ISKCON in terms of ordinary dharma. That's one of our mandates from Srila Prabhupada. In terms of sattva-gun and in terms of transcendence. And you can't necessarily... two reasons people may be acting in those other ways. One is they may be acting in those ways because that's part of our mission. So just like Srila Prabhupada was in transcendental consciousness, but he also wanted to establish ordinary dharma in the world. Prabhupada has so many purports about not killing animals, for example. Even though he'd say, our point is not to be vegetarian, still there's so many purports where Prabhupada will say, you shouldn't kill animals. We should stop the animal slaughter in society. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes. So Prabhupada's not on that position, but he's preaching in that position for society in general. So some devotees who may be pushing that kind of dharma in ISKCON, it's not that they're in the mode of passion, but they're trying to fulfill part of the mission of ISKCON. And some people are preaching that because they're in the mode of passion. But if they're in the mode of passion, they're in the mode of passion, and that's all they can do. They still have a place in Prabhupada's ISKCON. And the same with those who are preaching in terms of the mode of goodness. They may not be in the mode of goodness. They may be transcendental. But they see that's part of the mission of ISKCON. Or they may be in the mode of goodness, and then that's where they're at that time. That's what they can do. So there's a place for everyone. We don't have to, and it would actually be very wrong, to try to force everybody else to have our particular vision and our particular mission and be functioning at our particular level. When there's a synchronized dance, it's not necessarily that everybody's doing exactly the same thing. Or when you're having people sing in a chorus, or you have a concert, a symphony orchestra, different instruments are playing some different things, but they're blending together. So please remember that although we want harmony, we want unity and diversity. We also want the diversity. Our business is not to force everybody else to be like me. First of all, am I that great? Anybody here that great? That everybody should be like me? Anybody here want to say that? I'm so great, everyone should be just like me. Anybody prepared to say that? Maybe we actually think that, but we won't say it. You know? That's not our position. How silly. Everybody here have something you're not good at? Yes?
Yes.
Does everybody here have something you are good at? Yes. And you have something you're not good at. And guess what? The thing you're not good at, somebody else is good at. We're meant to work together. And in fact, I think you've already read it in this chapter, how in Vaikuntha that everyone is appreciating everyone else's service, right? You already read that purport? Wonderful purport, which I'm not going to try to find with the candle, and don't bring me thumbs. But it's a really nice purport where Prabhupada says in Vaikuntha, everyone's appreciating everyone else's service. So if someone has a different vision, you may have to give them a different area. Okay, well, you can work on your vision in this area. You can work on your vision in this area. You can work on your vision in this area. After all, we're trying to build a whole society. Prabhupada says we're trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the universe. Do you know he says that? You know, that's enough work for everybody. And that's enough place for everyone's talents and everyone's personality and everyone's mood and everyone's vision. One person is inspired to do cow protection. One person is inspired to get the outside dairies to protect their cows. Another person is inspired to spread kirtan all over the world. Another person is inspired to translate Prabhupada's books into all the languages of the world. Another person is inspired, right? Everyone's inspired in a different way. So if we want to have unity and diversity, first of all, start with a little humility. And the next thing is to see that everyone has a place they can be. Even if somebody is in the mode of ignorance and they think ISKCON is a place for power and money, frankly, there's a place for them. Just stay away from it yourself. I mean, to be honest. Am I correct?
Very nice.
Now, Prabhupada talked about one of his godbrothers. He said, this particular person, he wanted the property of Guru Maharaj, he said. So he got it. He said, others got the preaching mission and he got the property. So that may also be there. And if you see people that you convinced what they're interested in is power, money, prestige, followers, etc., 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 say at least they're in Mahaprabhu's mission, at some point they'll be purified and you stay away and you offer respects from a distance. And frankly, Mahaprabhu will also give them what they want in his mission. They will get what they want, let them have what they want, stay away from it. Does that make sense to you? Okay? It's called, What is ISKCON and Who is a Member of ISKCON? Okay? Do we stop? Where's our temple president here? Where's our authority? Should we just, about when we start, when do you usually end? What time do you end?
9:15.
Okay, we have 5 more minutes. Anybody else have any other questions? Yes,
Prabhu. Thank you so much. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, like what you mentioned, that Arjuna says that even though I am not interested to do something wrong, but still something is forcing us to do the wrong things.
Yes.
Maybe after we do that, we repent for that.
Yes.
So is it, how do we understand? Is it because of the reaction of the karma, or is it the process of part of atonement? Or it is because of illusion?
Which it? The doing the wrong thing or repenting?
Doing the wrong thing, which is forcing us to do the wrong
thing. Why are we forced to do the wrong thing? Because we have voluntarily submitted ourselves to the influence of illusion. Just like one time I was visiting a devotee family and their son was watching a sporting event on television. He was alone in the room. I was just walking through, and I don't know what happened in the television, but he jumps up and, "Ah, run, run, run!" You've seen this?
Yes.
So, in one sense, he was being forced. That's why people watch sports. You know that, right? That's why they watch sports. They want to experience some feeling. So the sporting event, in one sense, was forcing him, but it wasn't forcing me. I was walking through the room also where the television was, and I wasn't forced to do that. Why? Why was he forced and I was not? What was the difference?
He was attached.
He was attached. I also saw what was happening. Of course, I didn't understand it, but that's another thing. I didn't have any attachment. Or you can analyze it, whether you want to analyze it as karma or this or that. That's secondary. The main reason that I'm forced to act improperly is I'm attached. Attachment, fear, and anger. This, by the way, is gyan that we're doing right now. So if I'm attached to something, whatever I'm attached to, what does attachment mean? Attachment means I believe that this thing, this person, this activity is Krishna. And it will complete me and satisfy me. I need this thing, this person, or this activity in order to be complete and satisfied. That's what attachment means. So that's false. Now, if I'm attached to something, I have fear. I have fear that I won't get it or that I will lose it. This is exactly what Srila Prabhupada is talking about in this purport. So if I have this illusion that my job is the source of my existence, that without this job I will cease to exist. People saying good things about me, that's the source of my being able to exist. If people stop saying good things about me, I'll lose my job, I'll lose my position, and how will I eat? How will I breathe? Or I'll lose my relationships, I won't have any love anymore. Are you all following what I'm saying? Think for a moment, everybody here, think for a moment of something you're really attached to. Something, some person, or some activity. And you'll notice that you have a lot of fear wrapped up with that. Correct? And how do we deal with fear? Attachment, fear, anger. Under the influence of fear, we do sinful activities. Now this is, I'm now at 9:15. Should I finish this thought? Okay. It's going to take me another 5 minutes. So this is why we say the non-devotees have no good qualities. Okay, think about this for a minute. So I'd say everyone here, would we all say we're basically honest people, right? Hopefully. Yes? Okay. But are we completely honest? Anybody here prepared to say I am 100% honest? No. So we're honest. We're honest, we're honest, we're honest, we're honest, we're honest. And then a certain thing triggers us to be dishonest. Correct?
Yes.
What is that thing? It's always fear. Always. It's some fear that if I'm honest in this situation, I will lose something that I need. So as soon as we hit a strong enough attachment that's getting shaken, we get into fear and we do something that's against our ideals. Are you following me?
Yes.
And often we become also angry. Either we become angry at ourselves. How could I have done that? Why did I say that? Why did I do that? It's not the kind of person I want to be. Or we become angry at others. He made me do that. She made me do that. I love that one. That's a really funny one. You know? Well, she made me get angry. She made me tell a lie. I had to tell a lie because she did this. Or we get angry at God. Ultimately, actually, we're angry at God. And then we get upset that we're angry, and so forth. So it's attachment, fear, and anger. And it all starts with attachment. It all starts with basically lust. Therefore, Krishna says, Kama Esha Kodesha. It all starts with, I need to be complete. I need this for my completion. So you can understand philosophically, but the only way to really cure this problem is what we talked about at the end of this purport. You have to actually become complete. Now, if you already feel that you're complete, let's say you have, you know, so much money that you couldn't spend it in your lifetime even if you tried, like Bill Gates or something. Would you become dishonest for a small amount of money? No. Definitely not. If someone was cheating you out of, you know, some insignificant amount of money, you wouldn't give up your good qualities. If you have a big feast waiting for you at home, and someone doesn't feed you someplace else, would you give up your good qualities? No. Because you don't need it. If we come to the point, as Krishna explains in the Gita, that you have no need to depend on any other living being. If you see, I don't need anything in this world. I don't need anything. I don't need any other jiva. I don't need any particular activity or circumstance. I don't need any of that to fulfill any of my needs or to complete me. I don't need it for security, I don't need it for happiness, I don't need it for knowledge, I don't need it for love, I don't need it for community, I don't need it for peace, I don't need it for excitement, I don't need it for fulfillment. Why? Because I'm getting all that from Krishna, who's the only one who has it anyway, by the way. There's no other jiva who can completely fulfill our need for love. Or value, or meaning, or peace, or excitement, or security. There's no material arrangement that can fulfill those needs. It doesn't exist. Therefore, as long as we have material attachments, our whole life is made of fear. And as soon as the fear gets strong enough, we will give up our good qualities and do something that we don't even really want to do. How sad. So connect with Krishna. So therefore, you can deal with this to some extent through Gyan. Yes, but ultimately you have to connect with Krishna. When the hand is connected with the body, it's getting everything that it needs. When we're connecting with Krishna, then we will experience Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purna Purna Rudachate Purnasya Purnamaya Purnam Eva Vasishite. We'll experience I'm complete now. I have everything. The reason the devotee becomes detached from material sense gratification is because they're full, not because they're disgusted, exactly. They're full. So you can talk about secondary and tertiary causes. Why did this happen? Why did this happen? I did this karma. Go to the astrologer and they'll tell you in another life you did this thing and that thing. And that has some validity. But go back to the root of the banyan tree. Don't try to untangle the upside down shimmering banyan tree with each leaf and each branch and each go to the root with knowledge and detachment. Cut it down. My main problem is that I'm thinking that some item, some other living entity, or some activity, some circumstance is going to complete me. And when that's threatened, if it's threatened enough, I go to self-preservation mode, and in self-preservation mode, I'm willing to do anything and I give up my good qualities. That's what's happening. If I realize that I'm a soul, that I'm eternal, I can't be hurt by any weapon, I can never be killed, I have all happiness and knowledge and peace right there within me, I don't need it from some other source because I have it within me, because Krishna is within me and I'm part of him, then what do I care if I get it from another source or not? It's irrelevant. And therefore I have no reason ever to give up my good qualities, because I have full courage. It can also be called full faith. So gyan is helpful, undoubtedly. But higher than that has to be bhakti. We can have gyan as a servant to bhakti, but ultimately it has to be bhakti, that I reconnect with Krishna. I reconnect with Krishna, I am in harmony, I am complete, and then I am free from this lust, anger, and greed. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.